Hello, golf fans, and welcome to the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. I am your host, Chris Mitchell, and it is great to be back talking some fantasy sports, specifically fantasy golf in general. And if it's majors weekend of any major, then I'm going to be talking golf. Hello, I'm your host, Chris Mitchell, and I'm going to be talking golf with Chris Mascaro from Next on the Tee, and he does some football talk as well on a somewhat successful football podcast, as well known as the Thursday Night Tailgate, and I'm being very modest there. His podcasts are extremely good, extremely popular, and I don't know how the podcast on the football side allows him to spend all that time at Augusta. I think he should be banned from Augusta in order to do his football duties. And, of course, in exchange for him not being able to attend, I would slip into his chair and do his responsibilities over Augusta. I think that's what should be done. It hasn't happened yet. I've been lobbying for this for quite some time. Chris knows that I absolutely hate the idea of having to go to Augusta, but I said because he's such a good guy, because he's such a good friend to come onto this program on a yearly basis to talk all the majors with me, that I would make that sacrifice for him. It hasn't happened yet. He's been unwilling to do that for whatever reason that I haven't been able to figure out yet. But nonetheless, he's here talking Masters golf with us, which I love doing. Again, we talk fantasy golf only about four times a year. Whenever it's a major, I like to talk golf. And Chris is the only guy that I talk golf with for the most part. And not because I can't find someone else. It's because Chris does a great job and I love having him on. Let me bring him into the program. Chris, you must be having a fantastic week. I can't imagine not. I know you love it down there. And even if you hated it, you can't help but have a great time, even if you despise the place with all the dilly-dillies and all the suspensions and all the ideas of being kicked off the course that they've been talking about this year. Nonetheless, I have to assume you're having at least a reasonably good time while you're down there at Augusta, no?
Oh, Chris, as you and I have talked, you know, several times, this is my favorite week of the entire year. You know, getting to be, you know, over on the grounds at Augusta National, being able to share that with my son as well, it makes it even that much better. But they're just, you know, Augusta National is my favorite place on the planet. You could ask me a million times, Chris, I'll pick you up and put you down anywhere on the planet. Where would you want to be? And I'd tell you a million times, Augusta National. And this year in particular, the scenes are unbelievable. Last year, unfortunately, it got warm early, so we missed the azaleas, which, you know, Augusta National is always fantastic. But without the azaleas, it loses just a little something. But this year, the azaleas are in peak form, and the course is always beautiful. And, yeah, this is my favorite week of the year, Chris.
I can't imagine that isn't the case. I do want to get down there eventually at some point. Before we get into the golf of stuff, and I like how you brag about Augusta every single time, because I don't think you can get a feel for the Masters without talking about how special Augusta is. So while you've told me that every single time we've ever done the show, I still like hearing it the next time, because I think it's important that people realize just how special this place is, and you do express it in a way that gives us that sense. So if it's redundant, anyone out there who's listening to the show year after year after year, I'm going to continue to ask it, because I think it's important. If you're going to talk about the Masters, you start with the place that it's played, and it has nothing to do with the golf. The place itself is just special, and that in and of itself is important that we should be talking about before we actually get into the nitty-gritty of things, which, of course, is the actual golf itself.
Yeah, so, you know, I tell you what, Chris, when you think about Augusta National, and here's something, and we've talked about this before as well, but, you know, for your listeners who watch it on TV every year, and again, the beauty translates based on the color and that sort of thing, you know, through the television, but what doesn't translate is just the elevation changes around Augusta National. And I think that's something everyone should keep their eye out for this weekend, because let me give you a quick sense. From the tee on 10 down to the green on 10, and the reverse is true from the tee on 18 to the green on 18. The drop in elevation is equal to the height of the Statue of Liberty. All right, so think about that when you're thinking about these guys, not only in how great you have to be to play the course, but how what tremendous shape you have to be in just to walk the course. And, you know, and I always, my heart always goes out to the caddies who've got somewhere between 35 and 50 pounds on their back, you know, with a staff bag going up and down the hills, and that's consistent across the whole course. You've got undulation changes like that from the tee on two down to the green on two, and the tee to green on nine, and you're going up and down those hills all day long, and the shots that they have to pull off, because most of these guys now, Chris, right? These guys are driving the ball 300 plus yards. So when you think about two, and we can talk about where you can make up ground and where you've got to be careful out there. But on two, a par five, when you're carrying the ball 300 plus yards, you're on a downslope. So you're on a downhill lie to an uphill green. So that shot, and you're not going to see a lot of that, when you're watching this weekend. But those are some places out there where you've got some really tricky shots because the elevation is so much, the change is so much. And then, for how far guys are driving the ball these days, everything going well over 300 yards. So now some of that comes into play and can actually work against you. Again, think about it. You're trying to get on the green in two. And now you're doing it from a downhill lie till an uphill green where you're trying to stop the ball. It's something to see. And these guys do it, extremely well, obviously. But some of those things and the shots that they can pull off because of those changes in elevation are really outstanding.
And correct me if I'm wrong on the holes, because I'm terrible at this kind of thing when it comes to historical memory. But you get a good sense of that top to bottom kind of undulation and change in elevation on 10 and on 15, the par 5, right? 5, you're always hitting from way up, and 10, you're hitting downhill way, way down. Is that, am I getting those correct, those holes correct?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. Like I say, 10 is a long par 4, a little bit of a dogleg to the left, but yeah, you're hitting way downhill. So everything, now there's some undulations in the middle of the fairway, so you can get a bit unlucky because those undulations just happen to be right around the part where you're going to be landing the ball. So, if you're flying right into some of those, sort of moguls, if you will, trying to get a visual, you could actually hit it and it would bounce straight up in the air and not go very far. Now you've got a really long second shot. But the opposite of that can be true because some of that stuff is off onto the right-hand side. So, Augusta National is, giving you that opportunity to play both right to left and left to right shots. And if you can get a little bit of a fade hook on 10 and you can hit one of those on the sides or whatnot, you can really get a tremendous run and have a very short iron, maybe a wedge into the 10th green. But yeah, you've got a lot of shots out there, Chris, that are way uphill, way downhill. You can get a lot of run, you can get no run, you can have a downhill lie, you can have a severe uphill lie, side hill lie, all of those sorts of things out there, and then a lot of false fronts on greens. So, you can hit a nice shot and you think it's going to be nice on the green there. And then all of a sudden that false front comes into play and now you're rolling back 20, 30 yards off the green. So there's a lot of that out there. So as they say a lot about Augusta National, part of it is the experience and the local knowledge of where you've got to put your shots in order to give yourself a flat lie into the green, because it's all about, second shot. It's a second shot golf course. We talk about that all the time, and that's 100% true because there's a lot of fairway out there. But if you're not putting the ball in a place where you can attack the pin and have the right angle into the green, now all of a sudden you're giving yourself, you're at a great disadvantage, and goodness knows where that ball can end up. And from an easy birdie opportunity, now you're looking at 5, 6, 7. So that's a part of the charm of Augusta National.
You kind of sparked one last question before we actually get into the nitty gritty. And I've watched the tournament every single year since I can ever remember, but on TV and seeing it in person are very different things, and you can attest to that pretty successfully here. How uphill is that second shot on 18? Because it doesn't look like all that tough a shot, but it seems like they're hitting long irons, and it looks like it could be much more uphill than us watching it on TV even realize it is.
Yeah, like I say, it's severely uphill off of 18. And, in 18, if you don't really get a sense of it, it's to me, it's a very intimidating tee shot. For hackers like myself, because you got to drive the ball through a chute of trees on both sides. And we saw last year, I came into play with Justin Rose in the playoff, hitting it into the trees onto the right. Not hard to do because it's a pretty narrow chute you've got to get the ball through. And then your second shot is severely uphill. Like I say before, 10 being downhill, 18 is back uphill in the same elevation change as 10. And again, the elevation change from the tee on 10 to the green on 10 is the height of the Statue of Liberty. Well, it's that same height going the opposite direction back up 18. So you've got a pretty big uphill shot coming into that green. So it's going to play a club or two different. And again, depending on the wind, right? You know, wherever that wind is coming from, it's not an easy shot. It's not a flat shot. It's not just a gradual grade uphill. It's a pretty severe uphill shot. You'll see guys driving it, trying to get around the trees a little bit by the second bunker there in the fairway on 18. You know, guys that can do that are going to leave themselves with a short iron in, 9 iron, maybe 8, depending on if you hit a driver or a 3-wood off the tee. But, yeah, it's pretty severely uphill, and that's where the Augusta National challenges your mind. Right, because it's a thinking man's golf course. You've got to think about where you're going to put the ball off the tee to give yourself a good angle in on the second shot. But then, where do I have a flat spot? Where do I have a good lie to place the ball? Because that is going to play into your decision on driver versus 3-wood off of most tees.
We're talking with Chris Mascaro from Next on the Tee. You can follow him on Twitter at CT Mascaro. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at CJMitch73. And you mentioned the weather and the conditions a little bit in that explanation on that last question, and that's a perfect segue. Before we get into the players and some of the things like that, what are the conditions like? What's the weather going to be like? What's the course playing like? And we know that the greens at Augusta are lightning quick, but are they going to play that lightning quick like they always do, or is it going to be a little bit wet? What kind of conditions are we looking at this week, and what kind of forecast are we looking at, and what kind of impact do you think that might have on the way the course plays, and who may benefit or who may suffer because of it?
Yeah, and that's a great point, Chris, because the forecast is very interesting for the four rounds this week. And tomorrow, perfect. It's going to be sunny, high of 71. Now, it's going to get off to a cool start, right? The overnight low tonight is 43. So, those 8, 9, 10 a.m. tee times are going to come out with some temperatures in the mid-40s. So I think that's a bit of a disadvantage, having to play in the cold. By noon, it's going to warm up to around 60. But like I say, a cool start to the day. Friday's fantastic, much warmer, high of 81. So Friday is going to be a day I think guys are going to want to make hay. And the reason why I say that, because typically we think of Saturday as moving day. But Saturday's weather is a 90% chance of rain. The low that night is going to be 42. So, when we think about, what does that mean for Saturday? If it's a complete washout or the majority is a washout, well, now you've got some interesting scenarios playing out, Chris, because if Saturday is gone, right, or most of it is gone, now you're going to have to get all of those guys through on Sunday. And the reason why I say you have to get them through on Sunday, because Monday's forecast is just as bad as it is on Saturday. Another 90% chance of rain on Monday. So you're going to have to get this thing in, right? So I think, what we're going to find out on Friday, depending on how dire the forecast is for Saturday and when that rain is going to start moving in and how long it's going to stick around, then I think you're going to have to see what they do on Friday afternoon. We could see 27 holes on Friday, 27 holes on Sunday, right? Friday is just sort of the luck of the draw, right? Based on where your tee time is on Thursday, the inverse is going to happen to you on Friday. So Saturday is when we start, right, with the pairings and, based on, where everybody is on the leaderboard. So I think that whole thing is going to have a big impact on this golf tournament, right? So I think those are some things that you're going to want to take a look at. As you talk about, Chris, on this show about who do you want to, have in your fantasy league, people out there that are going to start betting on who could win this thing. I think you're going to want to take a look at where are they paired on Thursday and Friday? What are their tee times? And what could that potentially mean for where they could tee off on Saturday, whether they get the opportunity to play on Saturday at all? And are we going to start seeing guys that could potentially be playing 36 on Sunday? And again, 36 on Sunday at Augusta National with all those elevation changes and the walking and all of that sort of thing in a what could be a very damp golf course come Sunday if it rains all day on Saturday. Now, we know Augusta National has the sub-air systems and all of that. When you walk around, you can hear those things pumping out some of the water. We had some rain around here over the last couple of weeks. So they want, obviously they want it to be, fast and firm. So they're already pumping water out of that. But again, they would be doing a lot of that if Saturday is a rainy all day sort of day. So, you get no roll, right? A lot of those shots that you might get some of the extra roll on a fast and firm golf course are going to be slowed up, and it's going to make that golf course even that much longer to play. So I think the weather forecast is going to have a huge impact. And for guys that aren't the longest hitters out there, if you're trying to get into a cool, right? Again, if you're playing on, you know, Friday, Saturday, or Thursday, Saturday, in a damp, cool condition, you're not going to get the same roll and the same reaction. You're going to get better on the greens for sure. And again, Augusta National, to your point a moment ago, Chris, is the greens are everything, right? It's the speed of those greens and guys having to deal with that, where you can see guys like, right, we saw Ernie Els a couple of years ago. What did he, 6-putt 1? So those things are out there to get you if you're not, you know, not where you need to be. So I think weather is going to be a huge factor, particularly on Saturday and Sunday out there.
Now, I don't see Augusta as being a long course. It does definitely have some long holes, but it seems like it has a fair share of short ones, especially, you know, they have, what, 2 very short par threes. But it seems like a few of those par fives are pretty short. Would it, if it played a little bit sloppy, again, not horrible conditions, because that really makes things difficult regardless of who you're playing. But if it plays a little bit wet, therefore it plays a little longer, there's a little bit less roll, but the greens play a lot slower, does that open up the field even more to a more competitive Masters? Or, you know, some courses, especially like the U.S. Opens, where they try to make it so long, you remember when they tried to tiger-proof the U.S. Open, and what it did was it only allowed basically 10 players to even win because it was so long. Augusta wouldn't become a tiger-proof U.S. Open type of golf course if it got wet, right? It wouldn't get that long. So would the wetness and the slower greens actually make it more playable and more winnable for more players? Or would it just be so long and so tough that it would still be just as exclusionary as it might be in other cases?
No, I think to your point, Chris, I think what you'll see is it becomes more open to more players, right? I think you'll see more players sort of adopt the Zach Johnson approach to the par fives, right? You remember when Zach won, he didn't go for any of the par fives at all in the 4 rounds. He laid up, you know, on every par five and hit a little wedge, you know, in a sand wedge in, and then, you know, made his birdies and moved on. And I think you'll see that open up to that strategy more often. And then again, you know, hitting some of the longer irons in, the greens are going to be more receptive to holding those sorts of shots and giving guys some opportunities for eagles. But I think it opens it up more. But don't be too fooled. I mean, some of those holes are pretty darn long. Again, you know, number 11 is a place that can really, you know, jump up and bite you. It's a 505-yard par 4, a very hard hole. It's, you know, got a little bit of a bend to the left when you're on your second shot, and you got the pond there in the front, and you see a lot of guys bailing out right on that hole and then kind of chipping on and hoping to make their putt for 4, and that's a pretty tough shot, you know. And number 4, you go on the front nine as a par 3, 240 yards on a par 3 that's got a big false front on it. I saw guys, you know, hitting 3-wood on Monday out there trying to reach it. And, you know, some were fortunate and hit some really nice shots and got into the middle of the green. But you're hoping to get 3 and get out of there. Meanwhile, I saw, you know, a number of guys dumping into the bunker, it seemed like they were aiming for the bunker short because they feel like they can get out of that bunker and then make their putt for 3 and move on. But I also saw a fair number of shots come up short, and now you're 30, 40 yards off the green, uphill, trying to chip into that, and those are the guys who are going to walk away with 5. So, you know, there are a fair number of holes out there, Chris, that have some distance to them in the par 4 range. You know, 10, you know, we talk about being severely downhill, but it's almost 500 yards. You know, the downhill roll obviously helps you, but there are a lot of tricky shots. 7 is another tough shot out there. It's a par 4. It's only 450 yards, but it's a big elevated green that's got, you know, surrounded by bunkers, and you're trying to hit a mid-range iron that you're going to have to get up in the air and stick, and that's a tricky golf shot. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of easy, right? You even think about 12 being a short par 3, right? Only 155 yards, but as Jordan Spieth can tell you, there ain't anything easy about that hole.
We're talking with Chris Mascaro from Next on the Tee. You can follow him on Twitter at CT Mascaro. Let me get that here. At CT Mascaro. With the way the course is laid out, the way that it's been designed, what kind of player is maybe at a little bit of an advantage, and what kind of player and the skill set that they have are a little bit disadvantaged just by the way the course is designed and lays out? And again, will the weather make any difference one way or the other, or is it just still play the same?
Well, I think, you know, who's at an advantage, right? I mean, I think, you know, so the, right off the top, the left-handed players are always at an advantage out there. That's why we've seen, you know, Bubba Watson win it a couple times, Phil Mickelson winning it three times. Mike Weir, again, a guy who's not a long hitter off the tee, but a lefty, you know, has a green jacket as well. And the reason, you know, why that is there are a lot of, easy little sort of, fades. If you can sort of have a hook fade out there, it's an advantage for you. It certainly comes into play in a lot of the golf holes. Like I say, with five green jackets between Bubba and Phil, you can see that certainly plays into their favor. Where else does it play into their favor? Anybody with a good short game and a good putter, it plays in your favor. I mean, because, like, again, it's a second shot golf course, and if you happen to miss the greens, you know, in any one of the directions, a guy that's got A, imagination, and B, a hot putter, is going to play really, really well and fare really, really well. That's why I think Bubba's a guy that to watch this week, because he's not only does he hit it very long and he's left-handed, but he seems to have found his putter. So I think that certainly, you know, is going to bode well for him. How well Phil has played this year, that will bode well for him. Again, going back to the Zach Johnson example, if you've got a good short game and a good putter, and you can ride both of those things, I think you can ride it all the way to a green jacket. So I, you know, when I look at who does this golf course favor, I think it favors the guy that can, you know, shape the shot just a little bit, a gentle fade in either direction. If you're a right-handed player and you can play that ball just a little bit, you know, a little bit left to right, hit the ball high, right? Because there's so many of these greens are going to favor and be receptive to the high ball. So who hits the ball high and can fade it in either direction, I think those are the guys that are going to win, or at least be at the top of the leaderboard. And again, if you can ride a hot sand wedge and a hot putter, those will play in your favor as well.
Coming into when I randomly have thoughts about doing this program, I figured this was the year, because I've asked you about Tiger Woods and his relevance, and I've even asked you about Phil Mickelson every single year, even though Phil didn't seem all that competitive off and on over the last few years. I thought this was the one year where I wouldn't have to ask you about Tiger. Even though he was injured or whatever, I still would ask you, is he relevant in golf anymore? I thought this was the year I won't have to do it. And all of a sudden now, not only is he back playing, not only is he back playing multiple weeks in a row, but he's actually competitive, and he had a chance to win a couple of weeks back. So all of a sudden, the one year I thought I wasn't going to have to ask you this question, I wasn't planning on asking you, it seems like I have to ask you more this year than any in the past five. What are your thoughts on what you're seeing from Tiger Woods this year and his chances at Augusta, which, of course, in his career when he was at the top of it, he dominated this place?
Yeah, and I think he's going to be right back there this year, Chris. I mean, I'm with you. I never would have guessed we would be having this conversation 4, 5, 6 months ago, but here we are, and the back is fused and ready to go. And yeah, T2 at Valspar, T5 at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He's driving the ball, you know, 300 yards plus. He's fifth in scoring average right now, which tells you, you know, his short game and his putting are really good, which is, again, what you need at Augusta National. His shot gained putting, he's 11th. On the season, he's converting 35% of his birdie or better opportunities, which is 11th on tour, and he's third in one putt percentage. All of that lines up to tell you he's going to be at the in and around the top of the leaderboard come Sunday. I fully expect Tiger to be hanging around, if not in the lead, you know, on the weekend, and then it's going to be really game on to see if the young guns can are intimidated by him, and I don't expect them to be intimidated by him. I think he's, you know, friendly enough with guys like, you know, JT and Jordan and those guys. So I don't think they're going to be scared if Tiger Woods is at the top of the leaderboard like we saw, you know, in the late 90s and through the early part of the 2000s. But yeah, Tiger's definitely relevant, and he's definitely going to be a factor. I don't think you're going to see a Tiger Woods out there that misses the cut or is, you know, sort of languishing in the 30th, you know, somewhere down in that area. I fully expect Tiger to be in the top 15, top 10, and a guy that is going to be in contention, you know, late on Sunday.
And what about Phil? You like the way he's playing?
I do. I mean, it's hard not to, right? Again, he's another guy that, you know, we've talked about over the years. But, boy, you know, you look at his stretch from the Phoenix Open at the beginning of February to his win at the WGC Mexican Open there a couple of weeks ago, right? You know, in that four-week stretch, a T5, a T2, a T6, and a win. Right. So and even last weekend wasn't a great week at the Houston Open. He tied for 24th, but he opened with a 68 and closed with a 67. And the thing that, you know, we sort of worried about Phil, you know, over the years, A, we know his driver is no good, and that's consistent. And neither's Tiger's. Tiger, you know, the two of them can't seem to find a fairway to save their lives. But they're probably two of the best scramblers in the history of the game. And one of the things that, you know, that we've worried about Phil over the years, you know, based on, you know, the different putting strokes that he's used, is, you know, can he make a putt? Well, he's second in shots gained putting so far this year. He's fourth in shots gained, you know, around the green. He's second in sand save, third in birdies, and first in an overall putting average. So, which is why he's got, you know, all those top fives and a win, and he's third in the FedEx Cup standing. So, yeah, I think Phil's going to be right there as well. And, you know, we've all sort of waited forever, right, for the dream twosome between Tiger and Phil, hopefully battling it out in the final pairing on Sunday. Could, you know, this year could be just as it could happen this year more than it could have happened in all of the other years in the past. I don't think Phil is intimidated by Tiger anymore. I think he's comfortable in his own skin. So I think the two of them are definitely guys you're going to want on your fantasy team.
And if you were to look back at 2017 and what Jordan Spieth was able to do, I think if you compared him to the traditional season of golf, he probably either had a very good or even a great year last year. But I'm judgmental. Maybe that makes me a jerk. Maybe that just makes me a harsh critic. You know me and how high of a standard I hold some of these guys to. But I believe you hold a guy to a standard that they set, not what is generally accepted as either standard or whatsoever. So Jordan Spieth has set an extremely high bar that – most people don't deserve to be compared to, but he's already said it, so I hold him to it. What do you think of Jordan Spieth right now compared to what he's been in the last few years when he was amazing? Last year, maybe he was great. I don't know if he was just really good. I don't know what your evaluation of what his season was last year. But when you're looking at what he's been doing this year, what do you think of him, and what are your chances, or what do you like, or what do you think his chances are at Augusta?
Yeah, you know, Chris, you know, Jordan, you know, last year, obviously he won the Open Championship, right? So I think it's hard to say, you know, any year when you win a major isn't a great year. So I would say last year was a great year for him. And certainly he's gotten off to a very slow start, you know, so far this year. And I think he was really, you could say he was slumping going into Houston last week. And he finished tied for third, right, three rounds in the 60s with a final round 66, helped him jump from 57th to 36th in the FedEx Cup standings. But, you know, I think all he needs to do is to get his putter working. And that's typically what we think of when we think of Jordan Spieth and what's the strength of his game. I think we think short game and we think putting. You know, he's ninth in shots gained around the green. So I think you could say, you know what, his short game is really good. These third tee to green, I think that's something we don't typically think about Jordan as being really good off the tee and tee to green. You know, 17th around the greens, all that sort of stuff. But he's 185th in shots gained putting. That's not Jordan Spieth. But he's still 18th in scoring average, right, and 10th in greens in regulation. So here's the thing, right, when I think about Jordan coming into this tournament, right, coming off of a tied for third, coming off a final round 66, and again, three rounds in the 60s in Houston, and starting to maybe feel a little bit of that putter and getting that stroke back. You know, perhaps he's peaking right around the right time that you would want to see him start to play his best golf. And he's comfortable on Augusta National, right? A win in 2 seconds, though I think one of those seconds it was more crushing than actually finishing second based on, you know, his finish on, you know, on the back nine a couple of years ago and the disaster he's made out of number 12. So to me, that's going to be the thing that I'm going to watch with respect to Jordan. You know, how is he rolling the putter and how far is 12 in his head? I saw him out there on Monday in his practice round, hit a nice shot right on the green about 10, 12 feet away from the hole. But, you know, that's relaxed and it's in a practice round. It's not in the heat of the tournament, and the tournament being the Masters, right? So how is he going to react, you know, come Friday or Saturday on number 12. And if he's getting on 12 without a problem and the putter is starting to roll, then I think you got to say Jordan Spieth is just as good a favorite as anybody, which the odds makers are telling you, because he's a 10-1 favorite to win this tournament. So that's the two things that are going to be indicators to me. What's going on in Jordan's mind on 12, and how far and how well is he rolling the putter? Because everything else about his game is right where I think it needs to be.
And Justin Thomas, he's won, what, 7 or 8 tournaments in his last, what, 24 or 25, some ridiculous number like that. I mean, that's Tiger-esque. I'm sure you know the numbers much better. I'm horrible at remembering things. But is he the best player in the world right now? Is that run real? Is that better than – I mean, is his run Tiger-esque? Has he been that good? And everyone knows he's really good, of course. But I think he's been better than people are even giving him credit for. I mean, that many wins in that few number of tournaments, you don't see that very often. And yet, while we recognize him as being great, we don't say, wow, you know what? This is a guy who's starting to look like Tiger once did. We should probably be hearing talks sort of like that, and I don't think we are.
No, you're right, and right on all counts, right? I mean, you know, Justin Thomas has already won twice this season, right, with the wraparound season. He won at the CJ Cup back in October. He won again at the Honda back in February and was second to Phil at the Mexico Championship, right, a few weeks back. So, you know, by all intents and purposes, he could have won 3 times already. But you're right. For some reason, and I don't understand what that reason is, because I love JT and I think he's a great kid and his game is unbelievable. I mean, you know, again, you know, I'm 5'9", about 170 pounds. Justin Thomas isn't my size. But he's driving the ball crazy far and you know, just doing great things out on the golf course. I don't understand why we're not talking about him in the same vein as Tiger Woods. I think he's earned that. He's certainly a guy to me. Your first question is he the best player in the world right now? Beyond a doubt in my mind. Yeah, I'll take JT against anybody right now out there on the golf course, you know, one-on-one or in a field. I think he's got to be the guy. And if you're going to be betting on someone this weekend, I would certainly put a bunch of money on Justin Thomas, because I think he can definitely win. You know, you look at, he's third in shots gained overall, you know, shots gained tee to green, he's sixth. He's fifth in shots gained approaching the green. He's third in putting average, third in scoring average. I mean, he's top five in just about everything, right? And then he's got 2 wins and that second to Phil. So I think he's a guy that is definitely going to be contending this weekend, and he's my odds-on favorite.
All right, let's talk money now. We're at the end of this here. We're going to let you go here in a moment. So let's get down to the nitty-gritty of the money, where it matters, where we care the most, when we care about our pockets. Give me some guys you like, and then, of course, give me your 4 players and your caddy. And I'm going to save you this, because I know you always love Ooey Louie Oosthuizen. So I'm not going to make you pick him as part of your official foursome, a caddy. I'm going to let you pick him as your coach. So he'll count. He's just automatically inducted. He's like an honorary member. You know, it's like that guy who didn't even graduate from high school, but he eventually is given a degree to Harvard because, you know, he gave $1 billion after winning the lottery. Whatever it is, Ooey's your guy. He's automatically in there.
Yeah.
Again, give some people, some guys you like, and then, of course, make your 4 picks and your caddies, and we'll see what we go, and we'll get you the heck out of here.
All right, well, you know, you're right. I love me some Louis. So who do I like, right? Who are my 4 guys? Well, you know, I just tell you, you know, JT is my odds-on favorite. I love JT. I think he's going to win this golf tournament. Jordan Spieth is just too good and too consistent, and he's always there to not pick him, right? And we talked earlier about Phil. I also like Justin Rose. Justin Rose came within an eyelash of winning last year. He's a guy that always seems to be around the leaderboard. I think Justin Rose is a guy who could win this thing. And, you know, if I'm going to pick 4 guys, I'm going to take JT, Jordan, Phil, and Justin Rose. Now, you know, give a nod to Rory McIlroy, because we saw how dominant he was at the Arnold Palmer, and his game looks to be rounding into form. His putter, you know, is something that has, you know, bedeviled him over the last, you know, couple of years. And, boy, he was rolling it really nice there at Bay Hill. So, you know, Rory is a guy that I fully expect to be in and around the leaderboard as well. I mean, this could be just an absolutely star-studded, you know, leaderboard is based on how well the guys are playing. A guy who's a little bit longer of a shot, and I'm going to take my boy Matthew Lawrence, who's a great friend of the show, and he's high on Alex Noren, and it's hard not to be because he's playing really, really well. A guy, Chris, that, you know, that you always pick because he's always so consistent. I wouldn't be stunned to see Cooch right around the leaderboard. Always plays well at Augusta National, and as always, it seems like he's in the top 10, 15 at every golf tournament. So it wouldn't obviously stun me to see Cooch around the leaderboard as well. going a little further out, you know, dark horse, sleepers, who else wouldn't I be surprised to see playing well? Well, it's hard not to pick Ian Poulter at 60-1 right now off of his win at Houston. He seems like a guy who's playing with fire in his belly. I think he's really wanting to play well and get on the Ryder Cup team because he excels so well for the Euros in that event, but played exceptionally well this past weekend. He's riding, you know, hot playing and a hot putter. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ian Poulter around the leaderboard. Tommy Fleetwood is a guy dominating over in Europe, and he's 50-1. I'd certainly put some money down on Tommy Fleetwood to play well at Augusta National. He's a great player, and you know, he's going to break through over here eventually. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was at the Masters. Guys that are a little further down the list, Thomas Peters is a guy I've been waiting to break out. You know, ever since I saw him playing in the Ryder Cup a couple of years ago, and that didn't bother him at all. He wasn't bothered by the stage that the Ryder Cup was at a young age, and a guy whose game I think could round into form. He's 75-1. I wouldn't be surprised to see Thomas Peters play well. Pat Perez is an interesting pick to me as you start to get over the 100, right? He's 125-1, and Pat Perez just seems to have that I could care less attitude out there, but he always has the game. He's been right around, you know, the tops of the FedEx Cup the last couple of years, and been on top of some leaderboards. And like I say, I think his mental approach out there, I don't think he would be bothered by anything. He's been playing against Tiger. He's in his 40s, so he's been playing against Tiger forever, right? And a guy that I don't think would be bothered by if Tiger was on the leaderboard chasing him, or he was chasing Tiger, or any of these other younger guys. I think Pat Perez has got the right mental approach to be a guy from, you know, you want to talk about guys from way downtown at 125-1. I think he's a guy that could be a dark horse or a sleeper out there.
All right, now just to get you officially on the record, we've got Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, and Justin Rose. Those are your four, correct? Who was your caddy?
So if I'm going to go, longer out there, right, who's my caddy? I'm going to take a flyer on Alex Noren.
All right. And again, that's a flyer because he's a foreigner. He's actually been playing well in America this year, but he's also was good last year. So that counts as a flyer. But if anyone who knows about the European game knows that he's actually been pretty good for quite some time, it's just, he's not quite well known here.
Right. So, I mean, a couple of the foreign guys, again, Tommy Fleet would be a guy that I would take as a caddy. But again, he's been playing so well over in Europe, I don't know that would qualify. If you want to look at the guys, you know, say, hey, Chris, you got to take somebody 75-1 or better to be your flyer, then I would take Thomas Peters.
Yep. The caddy is essentially like Tin Cup, where Kevin Costner, the fantastic golfer who couldn't play in the charity tournament with Don Johnson, all of a sudden he comes off the sidelines and puts down the bag and starts hitting shots. That's what the caddy's supposed to be. He drops the bag, hits a shot, almost puts it in, and so forth. That's what the caddy's supposed to be, and you've succeeded in doing that for us here. Chris Mascaro from Next on the Tee, take a minute to brag about yourself a little bit. Tell people about your shows, your podcast, how they can find you and promote them in any way you want to, and then get the heck out of here because you shouldn't be talking this long to me.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it, Chris. Yeah, Next on the Tee, you can find Next on the Tee and Thursday Night Tailgate, both available online as a podcast. You can find us over on Podbean. We're on iHeartRadio. We're here on Blog Talk Radio. Wherever there's a podcast site, you're going to find our shows. We try to be everywhere that our listeners can be. Check us out, whether it's on one of those sites or on our site as well, nextonthetee.net, thursdaynighttailgate.com. Every week on Next on the Tee, I'm talking to, you know, two or three, you know, whether it's current players, former players, guys on the Champions Tour, legends. This weekend coming up, I've got Gary Player, I've got Peter Kessler, Matthew Lawrence. The aforementioned Matthew Lawrence has become a great friend. He does his own show, Backspin Golf, over on ESPN Radio in Lexington, Kentucky. It's his first week going out to Augusta National. So we're going to talk to him and get his what it was like the first time walking those grounds. Got Scott White, who's the CEO of Ben Hogan Golf, coming on the show as well next week. Coming up this week on Thursday Night Tailgate, again, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can stream us live here on Blog Talk Radio or, like I said, on any of those other podcasting sites. Who do we have joining us? Looking forward to a great show this coming week. Five guests every week join us. We got Vincy Glenn, Tony Collins, Don Horn, J.J. Burden, and Rick Upchurch joining us this week. So looking forward to catching up with those guys and talking a little bit of football. We talk football all year round. So, the season, there's never an off season, as we know, in football, just in the NFL in general. But we don't take any time off either. We talk about it year round. So looking forward to having those guys join us this coming Thursday night.
And that is my New England Patriot, Tony Collins, correct?
That is. Tony has become a wonderful friend. He joins us every single week, actually, year-round, whether he's doing our picks with us during the regular season or just sharing his insights of what's going on around the NFL. But Tony's a staple of the show. He joins us at 8:30 every Thursday night. But, yeah, former Patriots All-Pro running back.
All right. Chris Mascaro, thanks for coming on. Enjoy Augusta. Enjoy the Masters. Thanks a lot again for coming on and talk with us. And good weekend. Good luck this weekend. And give my best to your family. And give a pat on the head to your son there. Congratulations. He gets to walk Augusta. I'm jealous.
I appreciate it, Chris. All the best to you and your family. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
All right. That's Chris Mascaro again from Next on the Tee, where he talks golf. And, of course, Thursday Night Tailgate, where he talks a lot of fantastic football stuff. You can follow him on Twitter at CT Mascaro, CTMASCARO. He's in my feed because I've been posting about the podcast with a link to the podcast as well as some of the details about what we've been talking about on the show. So if you want to follow me to get the link to this show, if you're listening, you already have it. But if you want to go over to my feed, you can find a link to his Twitter feed, and then you can find everything that Chris is doing. My Twitter handle is at CJMitch73. I do a variety of different things. I'm a jack of all trades. I love talking golf. I don't talk a lot of fantasy golf. I'd like to do a little bit more of it, and maybe I will as we go here throughout the season. But when it comes to the majors, I like talking with Chris. We have him on for every single major, the Masters right through to the PGA. Fantasy golf is fun. It's an interesting topic. It's just there's not a lot of people that are all that interested in it, so we don't talk about it a lot. But, hopefully that'll change a little bit. Maybe this year, during the year, I'll do some podcasts that are golf-related or are specifically golf-focused. But mostly I do talk fantasy baseball as well as fantasy football. Do a lot of fantasy football during the season. Maybe touch and dabble a little bit in the offseason. But I'm not that fantasy football crazy where I'm talking fantasy football 2 or 3 days a week in the middle of June or even now. Even though it snowed yesterday, that doesn't mean you should be talking football. I think you should be talking baseball now. So that's mostly what I do. I also have another podcast called A Podcast to Be Named Later. We don't really talk fantasy sports on that because while this podcast is mostly focused on fantasy sports, the other one is almost entirely focused just on baseball in general. I do some writing for minorleagueball.com, and I do the podcast, A Podcast to Be Named Later, for that website. John Sickles does a minor league element as part of SB Nation. I write for them, and I also do these podcasts where I just like to talk about baseball. I throw in some fantasy stuff from time to time on there. It's impossible to talk baseball without talking fantasy a little bit, but mostly that's baseball related. The standings, who's playing well, who's playing poorly, looking at the horse races, looking at the trade deadline. I have a lot of guests on that are maybe fantasy people, but we talk mostly baseball there. And I also have Facebook pages for all of these programs. So if you want to listen to any of those podcasts or you want to interact with me or with anybody in the groups over on Facebook, you can do that as well. The two groups that I have is the RotoExperts.com Fantasy Sports Show page on Facebook. And then, like the podcast name itself, A Podcast to Be Named Later. We have groups. I post in there. I post baseball stories. I post links to my articles that I write for fantasy for RotoExperts.com. And also for baseball, whether it's minorleagueball.com or whether I'm freelancing over at Fangraphs on occasion. I don't write there on a regular basis, but I'm supposed to be doing an article with a namesake Chris Mitchell over there as well. He writes about prospects. He's a writer for Fangraphs. I do not write for Fangraphs. I am not that Chris Mitchell, we've talked about doing a Mitchell & Mitchell podcast and a Mitchell & Mitchell article on prospects because he does things a little bit differently than I do, and yet we have the exact same name. And I actually received a book. Somebody wanted me to review a book, and I think he believes that I'm a different Chris Mitchell. So he thinks that I'm the Chris Mitchell from Fangraphs, but I'm not. I've got that question multiple times, and so I have to clarify that. I am not that guy. But it's not a strange thing to happen. We have the exact same name. We both write about prospects, so it happens relatively, I wouldn't say often, but it's happened more than once, let's put it that way. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, at CJMitch73, you can get my articles over at rotoexperts.com, or you can, as I said, go over to those Facebook pages. But that's our program for today. Again, let me thank Chris Mascaro for coming on today. If you want to follow him, head on over to Twitter, at CTMascaro. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the Masters weekend. Enjoy your weekend baseball-wise, and hopefully we'll get you back talking baseball later on this week and starting next week, and I'm going to hit it gung-ho and really try to do a lot. Thanks, everybody.